Virginia Conversations on Virginia Public Radio is underwritten by the Virginia Education Association, the men and women working in Virginia's public schools. VEA, teaching, learning, leading. Online at veanea.org.
Made in China. That phrase is a lightning rod for controversy. Be it U.S. flags or Olympic uniforms made overseas or high-tech gadgets, globalization has its supporters and detractors. From the assembly lines to corporate boardrooms to political campaigns to you and your pocketbook, I'm Maylily Lee, and this is Virginia Conversations. Some see globalization as a necessary move towards a world marketplace, while others see the so-called Asian invasion as a threat to local economies. Our guests today are John Bassett III, chairman of Vaughn Bassett Furniture. He has fought hard to keep manufacturing jobs from going overseas. In fact, he has even taken his fight to China. We'll talk to him about his trip in search of a level playing field for furniture makers. Also with us is Jeff Kieber, Senior Deputy Executive Director of the Virginia Port Authority. The Port of Virginia has more than 35,000 employees and says it is responsible, indirectly, for more than 300,000 more jobs in the state. The port says it generates more than $1 billion a year in tax revenue for local and state governments. And later in the program, journalist Beth Macy will join us. Beth is taking a one-year leave of absence from her job at the Roanoke Times to research and write a book on the impact of globalization on manufacturing jobs in Virginia. Well, joining us now in the studio to start off with are John and Jeff. And John, welcome. You're right here with me. Jeff,
You're
in Hampton Roads. Hello.
Hey, good morning.
It's great to have both of you start off this program. I'm going to toss it first to John because in preparing for this program, I came across a wonderful quote from one of your employees, a 23-year veteran of your shop, Michelle Little. And I'm going to quote what she said, John, about how you have withstood the manufacturing erosion here in Virginia and how you have stood alone. She says, quote, "There were times everyone thought that we'd all lose our jobs. Even this plant here in Galax, everyone thought we would close eventually because all the other factories around here have closed. And they kept thinking, well, how can they survive when everyone else is closing? I knew John would do the best he could and do what he could to keep the company afloat, and he did. And so Vaughn Bassett Furniture is still making furniture while others have outsourced outside of the country. What's your secret?"
Well, I don't think there's one secret, but I should say that I'm a third-generation furniture manufacturer. My grandfather started in 1902 with the Bassett Furniture Industries. And in the furniture industry, I'm known as one of those guys who have sawdust in his veins. So I love the industry. I love the people. I love the product. And I love making something that you're proud of and that you're proud to sell to other people. So I'm not a newcomer. I've been around a while. The secret is multifaceted. But if you really get down to if you ask me one thing that we were able to accomplish that maybe other people were not able to accomplish, I will tell you it's people. We energized our people, and our people energized us. This is not a battle that you can win or be able to play on a field by yourself. Americans all have to join together. Now, they have to have leadership, and they have to have people who are willing to lead. But the secret of our organization are our people.
Okay, so the people are an important resource.
Absolutely.
However, you have to look at your numbers at the end of the day. So what were some specifics? I know that you used some high technology to help beat the numbers.
Oh, absolutely.
You had to shave your profit margins down, or at least work on how that rate of output was going to meet the input.
Well, you know, when you talk to most people about globalization, the first thing they bring up is price. And, of course, right along with price is the cost of labor. Well, people don't buy products just on price. And you have to look at all the facets. I think Napoleon said it best. He said, know your enemy, know his strengths, and know his weaknesses. So where our competitors were strong, even if we could not match them, we tried to narrow that gap. Where we were better, we tried to widen that gap. So one of the things we did was delivery. If you're buying a product from Asia, you're probably going to have to wait somewhere between 4 to 8 months to get that product. Well, we have a program called VBX. It stands for Bone Bass Express. And it's probably 80 to 85% of our product line. If you are Denver, draw a line north and south through the city of Denver, east to the Atlantic Ocean, from Maine to Florida, we guarantee you that we will have that product on your dock in 7 days. Now, that's awfully hard to compete with if your factory is 10,000 miles away.
Talk about the technology. You figured out some, you discovered through your efforts some amazing technology that could really get the job done quickly and maybe even replace many, many hands.
Absolutely. We went around the world. I mean, there's nowhere in the world that we won't go to find equipment. We prefer to buy in this country, but some of it's not made in this country. But we buy from everywhere. And now we have another practice. If that equipment is going to replace X number of people, we never lay off those people and get rid of them. Let's say it's 10 people. We keep them in the plant until, through attrition, 10 people retire or leave or whatever. So our employees know if we put a new piece of equipment in, it's not going to cost them that job. We will wait for attrition to take that effect.
Okay, that's John Bassett coming to you from Roanoke. Let's toss over to Hampton Roads. And, Jeff, we talk about the losses of jobs. However, on your side of the coin, you're seeing more and more generation of jobs. How come?
Well, it's the it's exactly what John was talking about, and I applaud the efforts that he has put forth to retain jobs in this country, and in particular for his employees. But it's the actual items that he's sort of waged war against, and the growth of manufacturing in other parts of the world. And we obviously are in the business of international trade, and if there's going to be trade moving in and out of this country, the Port of Virginia wants to capitalize on that. And because of our first-class facilities with extremely deep water, 50-foot channels that can accommodate the largest ships plying the ocean trade lanes today, the service by two Class I railroads, and a pretty robust transportation network to and from the port, we've been able to attract the construction of distribution and warehousing facilities throughout the entire Commonwealth, which has led to the creation of over 340,000 jobs that are port-related throughout all of Virginia.
Through which? And, exporting or importing?
Actually both, but more predominantly importing. However, I will tell you that the Port of Virginia is extremely well-balanced. We have a portfolio of about 53% of exports and about 47% of imports. And there's a great deal of Virginia agricultural products as well as agricultural products from across the nation that are being exported. It's the Targets and the Walmarts and the Home Depots where that's really driving the import side of things. And it's a fairly new phenomenon. Probably a dozen years ago or so, that was not the case. We've seen a proliferation of distribution centers and warehousing and logistics providers pop up along the East Coast, where when you began to see the shifting of freight from the West Coast to the East Coast. We have a unique opportunity here in Virginia because two-thirds of the U.S. population is within 24 hours of the Port of Virginia. And we want to move that freight that's coming into this country through this port, through the Commonwealth, employ people, and get the goods to the ultimate customers.
John, I've heard you use the phrase Asian invasion. The opening of China to global trade was followed by the decline of the textile and furniture making industries. Is it the cause of that decline?
Oh, yes, that was a major factor.
It's a singular factor in your mind.
No, we have two factors.
Okay.
First, we have globalization. And that, in our industry, and I'm speaking of wood furniture much more so than upholstery furniture, but it probably started around 1997, 98, and it was full-blown by 2002 and et cetera. And it made a huge difference. Then in 2008, we had the financial crisis. Now, that had nothing to do with globalization, but that had a devastating effect on the furniture industry as well. So people confused the two, but actually, they were two different tsunamis, and we lived through both of them.
Tell us about the trip you took to China and why you took it in the first place. This was back more than, what, a decade ago?
Well, I think I first went to China, actually Taiwan, back in those days in 1984. And we went constantly, probably through about the year 2000, because this was a new phenomenon. We didn't know what was going to happen. And if you don't know, you go look. And we studied the competition. We studied what was happening. And we had to, it took us years to determine what are we going to do, because that was a great deal of pressure to close your factories. Wall Street was in favor of it. When companies, public companies closed their factories, their prices went up, that stock price. And so, but what were we going to do? So we had to determine what to do, and one of the ways we reached that decision was by going to China.
Right. You were on a trail. You were on a mission. Because
well,
you had found a dresser made for $100 that had a China stamp on it, and you wanted to know what the source of this was.
Yeah, we did, and look.
If I have to, I'll cut to the chase of the story. The punchline is when the factory tour leader said, look, you can do business with us if you shut down your plant.
That's exactly right. Exactly what he told me. I was with my son. As I told you, my grandfather in 1902 was one of the founders of the Bassett Industries. And the first thing I thought, he would roll over in his grave if he thought his grandson was going to close all of his American operations and just buy from Asia. And did the hair go up on the back of my neck? Yeah, the hair went up on the back of my neck.
Yeah, and obviously you held off on that, while others in your industry did do that, in fact. I want to remind everybody, you're listening to Virginia Conversations on Virginia Public Radio, and we're discussing the effects of globalization on state and local economies. Now back to you, Jeff. One of the things that's interesting is looking at some of the statistics. Nationally speaking, 2.8 million jobs have been lost since China entered the World Trade Organization in 2001, give or take, give me some fudge room on those numbers, and 57,000 jobs in Virginia manufacturing, give or take. However, while we see those losses, there is an uptick in things like the ratio of Chinese exports to what we export back to China. And in fact, China is one of our leading markets, along with Mexico, Canada, of people who buy our goods too. So maybe you could shed some light on that for our listeners.
Well, that's absolutely true. As I mentioned earlier, we're pretty well balanced, and China is our leading trade partner for both imports and exports. And to John's point, in Virginia, our top export commodity going out of the Port of Virginia are logs and lumber. And surprisingly enough, John, the number one import coming in through the Port of Virginia is furniture. So the reduced cost of labor overseas certainly accounts for that Asian invasion that you made reference to earlier. And it is mind-boggling to so many people how a raw material like that can be exported and then turned into a product and then shipped back. And your expedited service of delivery within 7 days that you talked about earlier is an interesting perspective in a way to combat that sort of activity. But China is a huge consumer of a number of raw materials, and they are, in fact, as I said, our biggest trading partner. But, you know, the jobs that have been created relative to the port industry, this is a way to look at clean, new types of employment for Virginians throughout the state. And these are not factories. They are actually distribution, warehousing, logistics facilities that repackage the material from international ocean containers and stuff them into 53-foot domestic vans and make their way to the store shelves throughout the eastern seaboard. And I don't think that globalization is going to go away. We've seen how the manufacturing abroad chases the lowest labor rate, and I think that that's probably going to continue. So while I do recognize the importance of manufacturing jobs in the United States, if it's going to move by water, we certainly want to continue to be a major player. And from that standpoint, we have grown at the Port of Virginia from the early 1980s as the 32nd largest port in the United States to now we're the 7th largest port in the country. We're 3rd on the East Coast, and I think we're poised to perhaps ultimately become the dominant port on the East Coast because of the deep water that we have and the ability to expand and the effectiveness of getting that freight inland to further markets.
One more time on what our key exports are from Virginia, because I'm going to add to that.
Sure. Our key exports are logs and lumber, number one, paper and paperboard, including waste paper. Wood pulp is our third one. Grocery products is number four, and soybeans and grains those are the top five.
And here's how I'd like to dovetail that. This year, U.S. exports to China reached the $100 billion mark. Now, we were only at $16 billion in exports in 2000, so that's a big leap. And China is now our third largest export market, next to Canada and Mexico. And the products nationwide that we're looking at are computers and electronics that we're exporting, chemicals, and transportation equipment for aerospace and cars, and as you mentioned, Jeff, agricultural products. We're talking today with John Bassett, chairman of Vaughn Bassett Furniture, and Jeff Kiever, senior deputy executive director of the Virginia Port Authority. And we have a caller from Chesapeake. Cole, go ahead. What's your question?
Hi. Thanks for having me on. First, I'd like to pay respect to the gentlemen that you have as guests. I appreciate and coming on and sharing their perspective. I'd just like for the conversation to take a little bit broader context in terms of historical reference to globalization. We set up shop in Latin America in the 60s and 50s with the United Fruit Company and essentially destroyed those economies. And Americans have not really thought about the context of globalization in a negative aspect until the supposed Asian invasion has taken place. So I'd just like to hear the reactions of your listeners and your guests regarding what globalization really is in the broader context, and thank you for having me on.
Well, you must be psychic, Cole, because John and I were talking, and that's exactly what he wanted to articulate.
You know, we have been characterized as being opposed to globalization. That is not true. Our company supported NAFTA, our company supported China becoming part of the World Trade Organization. We told our government we would gladly make our operation more efficiently. If we could be defeated fair and square, let them defeat us. But we did not want to compete on an unfair playing field. And we're the ones that started the anti-dumping petition against Chinese wood bedroom furniture. And the Commerce Department and the National Trade Commission found that they were dumping. And all 154 countries in the World Trade Organization recognized dumping and illegal subsidies as a violation of international trade law.
Dumping being lowering prices below what you would sell them for in your own country, lowering prices to foreign markets below that which you would sell in your own.
Or if you're lowering prices under your cost of manufacturing. They might not sell it in their own country, but they might be cheaper than what they can actually manufacture it for. They get subsidies
from
their
government,
and what they do is drive other people out of business. So then you have your currency manipulation. That goes through the Department of Treasury. China's been manipulating that currency for years. Now, not as bad as they used to, but if you're 20-30% under what your currency should be valued, if I can compete with them or we can compete with them, even after they manipulate that currency, what do you think we could do if they didn't manipulate that currency?
No.
That's what we're opposed to. I mean, I applaud what the Port of Norfolk is doing. They should export. They should import. We are not opposed to international trade. All we want is not only maybe not a level field, but a playable field. I don't like to compete against some country that has that thumb on the scales.
We have another call, Mike from Stanton, about cheap labor coming into the U.S. Mike?
Thank you. I just appreciate Mr. Bassett's point of view, but I think it also occurs in the context that we are indeed a highly developed nation, and for us to have the major exports from Virginia be the using up of our natural resources for manufacturing elsewhere, when we're importing inexpensive labor without limit, that if the people who own businesses want more cheap labor, they just let them come on in and undercut the wages of the wage earners in this country.
Jeff,
it's just not right.
You might have a comment about that.
Well, what I can say about that is the demand for some of our commodities, coal in particular, is a big driver that's being exported out of the port to China and other areas for the manufacture of steel. And there's a huge demand for that. The demand for domestic coal in the country has significantly shrunk because of inexpensive natural gas and significant environmental regulations placed on the burning of coal in the United States. And I think that while the coal is used for manufacturing in other countries, it's not being consumed in the U.S., and I think it's a good opportunity for those U.S. businesses to capitalize on those foreign markets. I mean, it's globalization in the reverse relative to the importing of lower cost labor into this country. I can assure you that at the port complex, we have very highly compensated labor, and that is certainly not part of the equation on the waterfront. And I really can't address where that low cost labor is being employed. So I think
the point that Mr. Bassett is making is that this can't be solved at the level of Bassett Furniture or the port. It's a loss of national leadership to see to it that the playing field is at least reasonable vis-a-vis the smoke that comes from China is going to come over here. Whether they burn the coal here or in China, it's going to pollute the world. Well, and as we get more and more people, we're going to need the soybeans in this country.
Well, that's right, and I don't disagree with that. And I know when I was growing up, going to public school here in Portsmouth, Virginia, that we were all told that America would be the breadbasket of the world. And I think as you look at the agricultural products that are being exported, that's coming to fruition. We have a meeting with a major ag company that is contemplating some facilities in our area for significant investment for exporting ag products out of this country, going specifically to China to feed
that
consumption base.
Let me make a comment. This is John Bassett again. The gentleman from Norfolk mentioned that we are bringing furniture in, and it's going to distribution centers, and it was a very clean industry. I can assure you, as a furniture manufacturer, somebody had to make that product. Somebody had to finish that product. There is pollution involved. Now, does anybody listening to this program think the factories in China and Vietnam are cleaner than our factories in the United States? That pollution is going up somewhere. And to address the lumber and the log situation, I do have a great deal of sympathy for the sawmillers, because as the furniture industry deteriorated and other woodworking factories deteriorated in the United States, and we're one of the largest consumers of lumber in the furniture industry. But where were those sawmills going to sell that product? If the product was going to be made somewhere else, obviously they followed their customers. But that was probably out of necessity. But if we had maintained more of our furniture industry, we would have consumed more lumber.
It's been said that your standards for creating a product are very different from the standards in a Chinese factory. You've got EPA, EEOC, OSHA, hospitalization, retirement benefits, all of these things.
Yes.
With which China doesn't have to contend.
Absolutely.
We've got a call from Larry in South Hill, who actually has a question about your employees. And let's hear from Larry. What is your question relating to that?
Yes, hi. My question was, Mr. Bassett mentioned that his first answer to your question was, how did he do it? And he said the people. He motivated his people. And so my question, first of all, I wanted to point out what doesn't seem to be recognizing the debate and all the discussions in this country, is that these people are the workers. The workers are the people who are not getting their fair share. We're not paying the cost of our actual workers. But anyway, what I wanted to ask him is, how did he motivate his employees? Did he cut the benefits? Did he cut wages? Or did he bring them into management? What did he do to get his people motivated? He said that was a big factor in his ability to succeed where everybody else essentially had failed. And I would say failed because the laws have made it very difficult for people like Mr. Bassett to succeed.
And before you answer that question, you're listening to Virginia Conversations on Virginia Public Radio. We're discussing the effects of globalization on state and local economies. John, what's the answer?
The answer is several things, but first let me explain that I grew up in a very small industrial town in Virginia, and we went to work with our employees, we went to school with them, we played golf, I went hunting with them, my mother saw them in the grocery store, we did what they did. We were in the same churches together. So we had a basis for communication. So I called our people together, and I always told them this at the very beginning. I will tell you the good news. I'm going to tell you the bad news. I will never lie to you. But we have to do this together. We actually bought Asian products that were similar to our products. We would put our products in the cafeteria. We'd put the Asian products in the cafeteria. We would put our new product in the cafeteria that we thought could compete. And we explained to them what we had to do. And we said, do you want to do this? Now, if you don't want to do it, tell us. But if you do want to do it, we're going to do this and hold hands. And if you have to sacrifice, we're going to sacrifice. If bonuses were cut in our company at the end of the year, the first bonuses that were cut were the management. We cut our own before we ever asked anybody to cut theirs. So we trusted them, and they knew we trusted them. And what that created, they trusted us.
I'm looking at a quote from your son, John. He says, quote, like Steve Jobs, he does not take no for an answer. It's very telling. Now, we have Timothy. He is a lumber supplier to the furniture makers online. He has a question. Go ahead, Timothy.
Yes, sir. My name is Timothy Looper. I am from Freeze, Virginia, which is in the outskirts of Galax, Virginia. So we dealt with Mr. Bassett over the years as a small lumber manufacturing business, and in the 80s and 90s, we would produce approximately one tractor and trailer load of lumber per day, and we sold that lumber to Mr. Bassett, to Vaughn Furniture, to Webb Furniture, Elkin Furniture. Galax was a furniture hub, and this lumber was predominantly white pine. Now, once this Asian export of furniture began to affect our small business, we noticed that our markets for this furniture began to dry up. And now, Mr. Bassett is the only manufacturer in Galax that does buy lumber, and my business had to change from running a sawmill. We had to change our business totally and stop producing lumber to manufacture furniture out of because there was nowhere to sell it. We had to go to trying to produce lumber for log houses and so on. And at that time, that lumber was worth approximately $2,000 a load. I can tell you today that as I bring a load of that lumber to the sawmill, it's worth $1,250, the same load of lumber, even though our fuel costs are higher, our expenses is higher. And from my perspective, what this furniture importing from China has done is it's basically almost drove us out of business. It's down to where, you know, the profit margin is terribly less. But I can tell you, as being a member of this community, that Mr. Bassett, the community has high regards for Mr. Bassett because jobs in our area are just almost nil. We almost don't have any jobs, and I can say from a personal perspective that the entire community really respects Mr. Bassett for going forth and trying to stay in business and provide jobs for the people in this area.
Thank you very much. Mary Ann from Charlottesville, your question.
My husband and I have been trying to buy American furniture. It's good to know Bassett is American. But it's very hard to find made in America furniture, and I find the Chinese stuff is stuff I don't want to buy.
Wait, when you say you don't want to buy, is it because of the political scenario and economic scenario, or because of the quality?
Initially it was because of the quality, but as I've seen jobs leaving the country, I've become more and more concerned about buying American to support American. I don't want to pay to basically give my hard-earned money to a company that's employing people at basically slave labor overseas. And the things I've read about factories in China are horrific.
So,
to my point, where can you find a source to tell you where to buy American-made products?
Jeff, do you know that offhand?
Impossible, and furniture.
Well, I think it's an interesting question, but I'm not aware of any sort of website or resource that could identify, you know, where you could buy made in the USA products.
How about you, John?
It's strange that you asked that question because several weeks ago we were in Roanoke at Grand Furniture, and they have started an individual department of just made in America. Not only our products, but some other products, upholstery, and I know that they're going to have a gallery at the Grand Furniture store in Charlottesville. They're opening these in different locations, and they're doing it for this reason. The caller is not by herself. A lot of people are saying, where can I find Made in America? But if you go to Grand Furniture in Charlottesville, you'll find it.
Bob from Stanton, your question.
Concerns the top-level people in these companies that are not making it and what the salaries are and so forth. And I really enjoyed listening to Mr. Bassett, and I kind of have the feeling that maybe he could be a role model for that sort of thing in terms of motivating his people with not skimming so much money off the top.
Am I recalling this correctly, John, but didn't you forego your salary for an entire year?
Yes.
Okay. I'm sorry. I didn't mean to cut you off, but I wanted to be sure we were on the right track.
That's exactly what I wanted to hear. And, with these CEOs and people that are at the top level of management for these companies making millions of dollars and then complaining that, you know, the company is not making it, it's just so irritating. So that was my point. Thank you.
Well, look, we have five principles we follow. And the first two principles, number one is attitude. If you don't think you're going to win in life, I will promise you, you'll lose. I mean, you have to start this battle with the assumption, I'm going to win. But number two of the five is leadership. And that leadership must come from the top. And you can't fool Americans. Americans understand when they are properly led, and they understand when they are not properly led.
We have to take a quick break. But when we come back, we'll be joined by journalist and author Beth Macy, who's done a great deal of research on globalization and its impact on Virginia manufacturing. She will be joined by Jeff Kiever of the Virginia Port Authority and John Bassett of Vaughn Bassett Furniture in just a moment. We are back, and we are joined by journalist and author Beth Macy. Beth, you've been doing a lot of research for your book. In fact, you took a year off from Roanoke Times. Tell us what the book title is and what it'll be about.
Yeah, the book title is called Factory Man. The guy sitting next to me here is one of the main characters, but it's more than just about John Bassett. It's about kind of not only his very compelling story, but also the factory workers themselves and the people who have been displaced, as well as the people who are still making it in America. And if you look at the place where John comes from, Henry County and Martinsville area, they've had the highest unemployment rate for the last 9 of the past 11 years. Statewide, I think you already reported, the Economic Policy Institute has figured that 57,400 jobs were lost just through China alone. So that's not the overall total. Down in Henry County, you've got 1 in 3 households on food stamps. They've lost 19,000 jobs. So those are the figures, and that's part of the story I'm trying to tell, is how are those people doing now? What kind of work have they found? What are they doing if they're not working?
I am curious to know of the profile of one of these displaced workers. Folks who live, you know, maybe Central Virginia or in Hampton Roads area might not understand who represents the fabric of Southwest and Southside Virginia in textiles and in furniture making, in all of these industries. Can you give us an idea?
Do you want me to just tell you about some of the people
I've
met? Yeah,
the demographics, yeah.
Yeah. Well, I'll talk about this gentleman I interviewed not too long ago, Lane Nunley. He was Hooker Furniture's sample man. He loved the job. He worked for them for years. He was making $18 an hour at the height, and when Hooker closed, he was one of the minority of people that actually took the trade benefit, the Trade Adjustment Assistance Act, and he went back to school. And they help coach you, the VEC does, on what jobs are going to be available when you finish your program. And so he studied auto body repair, and he found a job across the state line, but easily drivable, and he now makes $9 an hour, roughly half of what he was making before, and he can't afford to take health insurance. So, you know, he's doing things like home remedies and whatnot. And that's kind of one of the good stories I've heard. I mean, there have been some pretty impressive stories of people who were school dropouts who went all the way, got their master's degree, and are now teaching, but those are very minority. Fewer than half even take the trade program to start with, because one of the rules involving it is you have to go to school full time, and they're like, how can I pay my mortgage and go to school full time? And they just don't see how the math would work for them.
In Southside and Southwest, are there communities that say, oh, one day we will return? Or are there communities that say, we need to figure out a different kind of labor pool, maybe based on different sets of skills?
Yeah, I think so. I think there are some people who are working pretty hard down in Martinsville. They've got economic developers looking at this. They've got the Harvest Foundation, which sold their public, the public hospital was sold, and millions of dollars went into this foundation that is designed to kind of help combat those losses. They've helped start the new College Institute. They're trying to really encourage. They've got people working in the high schools to help people who wouldn't have thought college was something they could do, go to college. They're trying to help them, get them on a college prep track. And
yeah, one of the statistics I looked at for the past decade is a high school diploma rate of about 60%.
Right. Pretty historically pretty low there. I mean, one person said, you know, you the saying was you went to high school and then you went to the University of Bassett Furniture. You know, we're talking about eighth grade dropouts. Some people just follow their parents and their grandparents straight into the assembly lines.
We have a call from Richmond, and it is Ben. He is a labor organizer. Go ahead, Ben.
Oh, thank you. I was calling because, although it was alluded to a couple times, I think Mr. Bassett talked about dumping, but I think, as Americans, we need to focus on the actual working conditions of those countries that import into this country. We've had no success, and I agree with the success of our ports that made in America exclusively is not the economic model that is going to provide the world with success. But although we don't need a made in America bug, I believe very strongly we need a living wage bug, that we need to be assured that the people who produce products that we import are paid a living wage and aren't exposed to the horrible chemicals or horrible conditions. I know Mr. Bassett has substantial air pollution controls and substantial protective devices for his employees who use the finishes and deal with the dusts. These things don't exist in China, and the people are expendable, and they suffer horrible effects that we think are inhuman in this country. And I think this is the profit that Americans need to start addressing, to say there has to be a living wage and a human wage certified before these products should be legally imported into this country.
Thank you for your call and your point. We have Wayne from Virginia Beach, and he has a question for Mr. Bassett.
Yes, first of all, thank you for the program, and thank you, Mr. Bassett, for your contributions to our community. But I just had this question. You were talking about dumping earlier, and one of the reasons dumping was profitable was those manufacturers could sell for less than the cost because of government subsidy. Is it true that our government also offers a type of subsidy by way of reduced cost to import?
I don't know the answer to that, frankly. The way you start a dumping petition is you get a group of your people who make the same product you make, and you approach the government, and you have to have 51% of the industry to support you. And the government really does the investigating. We don't do the investigating. They initiate the investigating. They have their own people. All we do is get the results. So the question you're asking me can be answered by the government much better than it can be answered by me. All I know is the effect we have when we have to compete with those products. How they get that, I don't know.
The last part of my question would be, in your reference, were you referring to the fact that the, for example, Chinese government may have been subsidizing the Chinese for their material in order to allow them to sell it less?
Absolutely.
Okay.
Absolutely. But we don't know everything they do, all right? But we know they do whatever it takes to win.
Yes, sir. We thank God for you, sir. And, ma'am, we thank God for this program. Keep up the good work.
Yeah, that's a really good point. I was having dinner with a friend the other day who works for a Fortune 500 company, and another piece we haven't talked about, we've talked a lot about offshoring, but one of the things I want to delve into in my book is also the bringing of laborers here who are doing things like IT work, computer programming from India here in our countries here. And I'm just wondering if that's something that that also gets, it's a story that isn't very well told, and I'm really interested in delving that more in my book as well.
Jeff, does that cross your plate a lot, the brain trust that we outsource, especially to India, for customer service, for IT, et cetera?
Well, that's really a different sort of outsourcing, if you will, and we're more focused on the actual...
physical products.
The actual products, and... so that really doesn't enter into sort of our equation, and I would echo what Mr. Bassett said. The Chinese, they're in it to win, and they're in it to make themselves very, very, very successful. And they do interesting things to us to penalize us. For example, we recently overcame a Chinese log ban. They banned Virginia logs. For about a, I don't know, 8 or 9 month period because of some infestation. We're still experiencing, and we've overcome that, and we had a delegation from China come visit and see how we treat the logs, and we have now begun exporting logs again. We were one of only two states that were singled out, and it's hard to understand why we were, why that occurred only here and in one other state. Additionally, we're still suffering from a poultry ban. Virginia poultry is banned from being imported into China, and that is a huge, huge ag product that should be going over there, and it gets caught up in larger trade issues, and it's that unfair playing field that Mr. Bassett was referring to earlier that adversely impacts Virginia businesses.
You know, you're mentioning logs. I would like to say this. We started this 5 years ago. I think we're the only furniture company in the world that does what I'm about to tell you. We bought in the Virginia Department of Forestry, and they looked at all the lumber we use and buy every year to make our product. Then they went back and they analyzed and told us that it took 135,000 trees to produce that much lumber that we use every year. So for the last 5 years and continuing in the future, we buy 150,000 seedlings from the state of Virginia, and they have them planted. We pay for it, but we replace every tree we use. We plant a tree to replace it.
Now we have a call from Dennis, and Dennis, you're from Chesapeake, right?
That's correct, and this is an issue that I'm passionate about. I'm the president of the American Jobs Alliance, AmericanJobsAlliance.com, and we're a nonprofit, nonpartisan activity. It's about a year and a half old. I'd refer to people to several of our board members and affiliates related to this are, amongst others, a person by the name of Alan UK, who's just written a book that you can find easily called Buying America Back. Another one, of course, is authors of a book called Death by China, and I would reference people to a movie trailer, a documentary movie trailer that's just out called Death by China, in which case you'll see some of the egregious situations that we compete against under the name of so-called free trade or fair trade. I also would reference a gentleman whose name is... Mr. Moser, Harry Moser, who is actively involved in ReshoreNow.org. ReshoreNow is specifically, as you might imagine, promoting very actively bringing jobs back to the country. Our initiatives then very quickly include Buy American and avoid consumption of American, of China-made products, promoting Eat Local and Shop Local, reform tax and trade policies, and also advocacy for vocational and skilled trades training, amongst others. So AmericanJobsAlliance.com, if people were to go there, you'd find a wealth of information. We are hooked up with very important people who are doing important things to move things back in the right direction. And in a nutshell, we've concluded that if Americans simply decide that they're going to just try to buy American, they will find out, much to their surprise, that there's a lot of opportunity to buy American that doesn't cost more and in many cases has higher quality.
Okay. Dennis, thank you so much for your call. There's a caller who didn't want to be on air, but he wants to know if the changes China forced you, John Bassett, to make actually helped your production. And dovetailing that question is this question from Madison from Charlottesville.
Am I on the line?
Yes, you are.
Oh, good. I've obviously known John Bassett for a couple of years, but I wanted to say that there's a lot to be said for sheer willpower and sense of mission and flexibility that goes into this kind of equation. Time and again, leadership of industry has proven an ability to work against the grain, and I think John is doing this now. We still admire brands like Porsche, BMW, Fiat, that are all predicated upon some of the highest wage structures in the world today. And those companies have been successful in this environment purely as a result of their capacity to have a vision for how to lead those companies and devise a product, reinforce a brand that is as well regarded today as it was 100 years ago. But I think again, the way through these circumstances is a result of not calling it quits, but fighting the good game, understanding the rules, and demanding an opportunity to play in a fair manner.
I agree with you. It's amazing what people can do if they want to do it. We can do so much more than we think we can do. And you do have to have the right leadership. But one of the things I tell my people is this: we need more football coaches and we need less accountants. And let me tell you how I explain it. You're the coach of a high school football team, and you're playing last year's state champions, and they've been undefeated. You're a 14-point underdog, and you're in the locker room. You're talking to your guys before they go out in the field. Now, an accountant would probably say, if we only lose by 10 points, we beat the spread. Guys, what football coach would you keep if he told his team only to lose by 10 points? Football coaches have to win. All coaches have to win. And you've got to inculcate that team and your people with the spirit that we can win. The American worker, in my opinion, is the most efficient worker in the world. They want people to lead them. They will follow leadership. And it is shocking what they can do when they put their mind to it.
For people who want to find out more about Beth's work, both on John personally and on the manufacturing industry in Virginia, how can we track your work?
Well, we ran a series in the Roanoke Times, and that was called Picking Up the Pieces, which is at roanoke.com. I also have information on my book at intrepidpapergirl.com. That's my blog and website. And the book will come out in 2014. It'll be published by Little Brown and Company, and it'll be called Factory Man.
It's a great series, Beth.
Thank you so much.
And you have some favorite reading. In fact, you, John, gave 100 copies of this book to employees. What is it?
Who Moved My Cheese?
By Spencer Johnson.
Do you want me to explain this to you very briefly?
30 seconds, yes.
Okay. There's four little mice, and the cheese gets moved. And the question is, do you find the cheese? Is the cheese coming back? And three of the mice finally find where the cheese is moved. And I asked my employees, what should this company be like? And every one of them picked one of the ones that found the cheese. And the answer to my answer is this. That's a good answer, but the best answer is, why can't we be the one moving the cheese?
Love it. Something the author never thought of, actually.
Why do we always have to follow somebody else?
That's wonderful and a great way to wrap. That's all the time we have for this edition of Virginia Conversations. I want to thank our guests, John Bassett, chairman of Vaughn Bassett Furniture, Jeff Kiever, senior deputy executive director of the Virginia Port Authority, and journalist Beth Macy. Thanks for joining us on Virginia Conversations. I'm May Lily Lee.
Virginia Conversations on Virginia Public Radio is underwritten by the Virginia Education Association, the men and women working in Virginia's public schools. VEA, teaching, learning, leading. Online at veamea.org. And by listeners of this Virginia Public Radio member station. Listeners can hear this program again or access other Virginia Public Radio news content at virginiapublicradio.org. This is Virginia Public Radio.